with the composer.
Okay. So, I think I'm more responsive by saying Trey, you know, the eagle, and he himself, right? So, obviously, don't make or blossom. This is three now.
So, Lema, are we to say that Messiah Leila Rav, the Omar Rav, Yehuda Omar Rav,
shall we say that what we learn over here
is a support for a statement that was made by Rav Yehuda in the name of Rav, namely, and this is in reference to Yichud. Now, you know what the principle of Yichud is, that, you know, men and women should not be in a position where immodesty can take place, okay? So, Gemara says, in Kedushin, where they discuss this, it says, Leishonu Elo Be'ir. In other words, two men are allowed to be with a woman in the city, okay? In other words, that would not be a violation of Yichud. Abol b'derech, but if it's on the road, adi kushloishim, then you have to have a minimum of three men in order to be free of the idea, you know, that that any immodest action can take place. Why? It says shemit storach echad mehem in a convo. It's possible that one of them who is escorting her has to use the bathroom. So if there are only two accompanying her, right, and one of them is unfortunately he's occupied elsewhere, right, so in that particular case we'll find that there's only one man now who's together with her, and that would be constituting yichud, you know, a violation of the law of yichud. Okay,
but there is a third man, the husband is there.
No. This is if they only send two.
Oh, if they only send one.
Right.
Excuse me.
He wants to know
why.
This would be
why two?
Right.
Okay.
In other words, that's this law that we have in Sanhedrin. Is it applicable over here?
Okay.
The idea of Yichud. Okay. So he
but
says.
But Yichud take place when the husband is with the wife. I mean, is Yichud applicable when the husband and the wife are both together?
No, if the husband and wife are together, that's that the law doesn't.
So why is this a problem?
Talking about two men who are not related to her.
All right.
Okay. There are all kinds of laws. I mean, I'm not going.
Well,
to
maybe I'm just
right.
assuming well, that the four of them are traveling.
If he's forbidden to her, if she's forbidden to him at that time, then that
no,
would be.
No. Don't jump to conclusion yet. Yeah. No, did.
But
patience.
But
not
to beat this into the ground. But let's say the four of them are traveling together.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's say three are traveling together.
Yeah,
all right.
Right. Yeah.
The one.
The two talmidei chachamim, or do you mean just the woman and two men?
The woman, the extra man, and the husband. All right.
Yeah.
Now, if the extra man goes off, all right, then the husband and the wife are alone. There's no yichud,
okay.
All right? So you're...
Hold it.
You're...
Okay, number one, they're talking about yichud over there, and the question is it applicable over here in this case?
Mm-hmm.
That's why it says, Leva Messiah. Are we to say that this supports an opinion that's over there? In other words, can we say that, you know, the two opinions are really based on the same idea? Or maybe they're not. We'll see. We'll say no. Lo, that's the next word over there. No. Okay. But I want to point out here. There's another factor. What is the other factor that we mentioned? The other factor that we mentioned over here is that the law of yichud, where I mean a husband and wife are together, obviously normally doesn't apply. But what are they concerned with over here, according to the Mishnah?
That no happy relations.
Right.
Have
relations.
Right.
Okay, so this I understand.
Okay.
Because
then
if one leaves, then there are two possibilities, neither one of which is acceptable.
Okay, so far right now, the question is then, are we to say that this is the basis of it, the law of Yichud that we have in the Gemara Kedushin? So it says lo. It says no. Why? Because ho-ho, here in our case, the reason is because here we want to make sure that there are witnesses who are concerned with escorting him. They're there for a purpose, and the purpose is to witness this trip to Yerushalayim. Okay? And not only that, Talmidei Chachamim in. It means yes in Aramaic. Okay? Talmidei Chachamim? Yes. These are the kind of witnesses that we need. But Kulei Alma, other people, in other words, the whole world, you know, who are not Talmidei Chachamim, no. Alright? So, this is the first one in order to knock down the argument that, you know, that the law of Yichud over here is what is being applied. It's not. We have a specific purpose over here, namely that the witnesses should see that things are done correctly, and in order to make sure, we have to have Talmidei Chacham. Okay. Lema, are we to say that Messiah Leila Yiduch Rav, the Omar Rav Yehuda, Omar Rav? Maybe we should say that what we have over here in our Mishnah supports another idea that was proposed by Rav, as quoted by Rav Yehuda, namely Lo Shanu Elikashavin. Gemara over there in Kedushin Osnavet Zora, it says that when do we say that, you know, you could have, let's say, two witnesses in the city or three witnesses on the way? This is where we know that the witnesses are Kashavin, in other words, that they're people, you know, who they're honest people. They do what the Lord expects of them, right? About Prutzen. But if you have people who are law breakers, in other words, you know, that they that they live a loose life, right? So I feel about Saranami law, right? So ten, even if you had 10 of them, that doesn't mean anything. It's not the kind of people that we want to have. Okay? And then they quote a Maisa. It says, Maisa is a story, for example, Maisa Hoyo. There was a... that happened one time, that what happened, though, it's a Yuha Zorah B'mito, that 10 men, of loose character, of course, took out a woman on a mito. A mito doesn't mean a bed over here. What it means is on a... the beer that they used to carry to the Beisil. Yeah.
Right.
Because in those days, they didn't necessarily use coffins. You know, they would wrap the body, you know, with
coffins
and so on, and then carry them like on a stretcher. And that they called the mito. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
You know, to bring it to Kibur in the Beisil. So, they wrapped this woman so that she should look like what?
Like
she was
a
mesa, right? And they took her out to the field, and they had a good time with her over there. Because they were what? They were putzim. So he says, "Lo, no." He says, "Hocha hayde tama yadu l'sviyabe." No, this is not the reason why we have Talmidei Chachamim. Why do we need Talmidei Chachamim? We have it because if he is tempted that he wants to do something with his wife on the way, in other words, to have relations with her, so then they can give him hasra. They can give him warning that this is wrong, and he's not allowed to do that. Whereas, let's say, if it were Kulei Almos, we would say, an ordinary person would say, hey, that's not right, even though we say that the other person is an Adam Kosher, you understand? But he doesn't have the authority in the eyes of a person that who? That a Talmid Chacham would have if he tells you, you know, this is prohibited by law and you're not allowed to do this. Okay? Alright, Rashi?
It's prohibited, yes. But it's prohibited in the sense that it will destroy his case. It's not absolutely prohibited.
Okay, you asked a good question, and we'll have a good answer for it.
Okay.
Okay. With a little patience, okay?
Okay.
That's all right. We're
playing the same tune, I know.
Problems,
okay.
But hopefully Bill Murray is also participating.
All right.
Okay?
Rashi.
All right. So, going back to the Gemara, the Rashi over there, it says, Loishonu, it says, Hodit non bekedushin, right? Abol Hishon is a chedus of Shein Hoshe. That the Gemara in Kedushin says that a woman can have yichud if there are two men, not with a single person, but if there are two people, right? So then we said that this applies where? Ba'ir, but not basoda, right? Why not basoda? Because if they're on a trip, so shalit storik, right? That hocha dami hoyel ishtayim asurim bo, inasmuch as both are prohibited, you know, to have anything to do with her, that is in a sense, you know, they can't have any relations with her. So lo sagi betray. It's not enough. Shemi itzori chabal or shliach bezdin in the common, because it may be either that the husband has to use the bathroom, or maybe that one of these witnesses, you know, people are going along to escort them and will have to use the bathroom and walk them off the altar. All right. So then they say, no, that's not the reason. We're not worried about the yichud part, but we are worried about the fact is the lehadei alei sadeh, that there has to be witness over there that in yobo oleho, right, that if the husband does have intercourse with her, then what? Yehidu alav the best nagodo v'lo yashkuma. Then they'll bring testimony against the husband before the High Court in Yerushalayim, they will not give her, you know, the Maim HaMorim.
That's a good point. By the way, if something untoward were to happen, this would be niyuf, right? I mean,
No.
Because she's a married woman, right?
No, what do you mean if something should happen? With whom?
With one that Tommy Day.
Absolutely, she's still married to the husband.
So you're talking, not just Yehud, you're talking really the most severe possible.
Right. Yeah. I mean, this reminds me of what we learned last week about, he comes into the, that they come into the court, but maybe some of the young Kahanim decide at the time. But we rejected that eventually.
Yeah. Well, certainly.
But it's along the same lines.
It's dangerous.
Okay. Then it's written, Leishno, in other words, making the Ishlam Tzacheres in Shnei Anoshim, this. When do we say that it applies, right? You have to have what kind of people? With whom, in other words, with whom can she have Yichud? And to comply with the law, the answer is, we learned that they have to be, people who are Kshirim, right? But if they are Prutzim, we said, then in that case, it is Vahotzi Yuhu Asorah, right? They bring the case of where 10 brought, Le'eshazish, they brought out a married woman, Chutz Lo'ir, Benito, right? Took her out of the city in a beer, the Cheskas Beso, in other words, where, the presumption was that she was dead, Le'kal Kelimo, in order to do monkey business together with her. All right, so why do we say that, we're not talking about laws of Yichud over here, but we're talking about Tamid HaChamin, they're there for a specific purpose. Why? The Yadi Lasriya Baby said, the Lo Malo to tell him, Min HaTorah, according to the Torah, Kishain Ha'ish Menuke Me'ovo, if the man himself is not clear of sinning himself, in other words, if he is guilty of sinning, Shebo Leho, Mishanesro Allah, and that, he had relations with her after she had become prohibited to him, because that he had already been warned that he can't live with her as husband and wife right now. So ain't a mind but kimisishta. In that case, the water is not going to have any effect at all, as far as determining her guilt or innocence. He himself has to be free of sin for it to be.
Question.
Sure.
Would the Beis Din accept a woman witness?
Well, under certain circumstances, the answer is yes. I told you some time ago that when it comes to Isur Veheder, in other words, to testify whether something is kosher or treif, for example, in the case of whether a person had passed away. Very important, in order to make sure that the woman doesn't become an aguna.
Right.
So there has to be, a witness to the fact that they know that this person had passed away.
Right.
So in that case, we accept the testimony of a woman. Yeah. So under those circumstances, yes. Now in this particular case, I don't know whether the testimony of one woman would be accepted. I don't know.
No, I'm just curious. It could be that a woman saw her secluded with another man, and comes and tells the husband and brings charges against her.
I understand.
It could also be a matter of jealousy too.
This case, it would be accepted simply because this is a serious business. Okay. As a result of her testimony, this woman becomes prohibited to her husband. Okay?
Yeah.
Whereas in the case that I mentioned, you know, let's say if identifying, you know, a woman that says, I saw this man and I know that he passed away.
Yeah.
So there, it's in order to free the woman so that she could be married. So it's a different situation.
Yeah.
All right.
But nevertheless, it's an interesting question.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, getting back to Rabbi Yehuda, the Gemara. Okay, Rabbi Yehuda, Eimer, right, Baalah, Ne'eman Aleha, right? This is what he said, that her husband can be trusted concerning her. What do you mean, trusted? Trusted, in other words, that we don't need two Talmidei Chachamim to escort them. That the husband alone can take it. Well, of course, now the question is, why does he hold that? So, Tanya, we have a Tosefta which says as follows. It says, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, he says, Baalo Ne'eman, right, that the husband is trustworthy to escort his wife over there and nothing's going to happen on the way. He's not going to try monkey business. Right? He says, Mekal V'chaymer. It's based on a Kal V'chaymer. You know, Kal V'chaymer means, if it's true in this case,
it's true,
then
yeah,
it's certainly true
sure.
in another case. Okay, right. That's the Kal V'chaymer. What is the Kal V'chaymer? So he says, Uma Nido, let's take the wife who is now, she's menstruating, right? Shehi Bekores, right? And, you know, what would happen if a man has relations with his wife during the time that she is in Nido? So the answer is, he then would be guilty of the punishment of Kores. In other words, literally, that, you know, that the nefesh would be cut off. In other words, he died early death or something like that, right?
Right.
So, and this is a very serious, you know, punishment. In other words, if you know, if it's one of those things where Kores would be involved as the punishment, then we know that this is a serious offense, all right? So, in the case of Anita, nevertheless, what? Baalo Ne'eman Aleha, a husband is trusted concerning her. In other words, that he's not going to have relations with her during the time that she is in Nida. We trust him. We don't have to have people coming into the house
in order to
take care of him to make sure he doesn't do anything.
It's a logical thing.
So Sota, in the case of the Sota, Shehib Allah, where this is a negative commandment, so to speak, but this is not the kind of a thing where the Torah says that the punishment is going to be that, you know, that they'll get kores or that they'll get the death penalty or anything like that. It's simply, you know, it says, don't do it. That's all. That's what love means over here. Don't do it, right? So, Sota Shehiba Love. In other words, this is not, where the punishment is not as serious in the case of the Nida, then low culture came, then all the more reason that the husband should be trusted concerning her. Right? This is Rabbi Yehuda's reasoning based on a Kal V'chaymer. Okay? In other words, Rabbi Yehuda says, look, the husband isn't going to try to do anything with her because here the punishment is not so great, and yet nevertheless he's going to control himself just as in the case of the Nida. Say Zokter. Okay.
No, I think I understood it differently.
Yeah, okay, fine. How do you understand it?
That neither is it Issacharis. It's a much more severe penalty.
Correct.
And still we see that the Torah gives him the Amanis.
Right.
So then.
So in the case of
a law. Why should we doubt that the Torah gives the Amanis in the case of a minor penalty?
Right.
Right.
What
you
okay.
say?
Yeah, yeah.
The same thing.
Basically.
Yeah, okay.
All right. Yeah. I start with A and I start with B.
Yeah. Yeah. Easy.
At first, I was really, I was so puzzled by it, right. You know, because right. it seemed actually counterintuitive.
Yeah. But
you
obviously,
believe,
we
just
both
because you
mean
believe
the same
in
the
cars, why should you believe
right.
in the love?
Right. But nevertheless, the idea is, I think, as you stated and as I said, it's the same idea, really.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, we should
say
that Baalo Ne'eman Aleha, that's all. The husband should be trustworthy, and that's all there is to it. That, you know, if he can refrain himself here, he can refrain himself over here. Well, okay? This is Rabbi Yehuda's reasoning. Aye, but the Chachamim are not happy with it.
It isn't logical.
Yeah, the rabbis?
Well, it's because the punishment for the husband in the first situation is severe. Right? But in the second situation, the punishment for the husband
is
kal.
The punishment is simply that he loses his right to take it to Yerushalayim.
The punishment is kal. So that's... follow, you know, the a fortiori argument.
He should not do it. That's the law. But nevertheless, the punishment would be simply that he loses his right, you know, to force him to take the Latin honorum.
Mm.
Okay.
Yeah. But we know the Chassidim are not going to be happy with it.
Right.
I'm not happy with it either.
Yeah, the Rabbanon are the common sense.
Right.
So Rabbanon, but when it came to the rabbis, they disagree. They say, wait a minute, they say. This is the way you have to argue as follows. It says, Nida, the Koris Chamira, right? In the case of Nida, where we know that the penalty for violating it is Koris, and this is Hamira, and this is a very severe penalty, right? And he knows that it's a severe penalty. So in that case, Umehemon, he will be, you can trust him, you know, that he's not going to violate the law by having relations with his wife when she is a Nida. But Sota, the love, lo Hamira lei, but in the case of Sota, where the negative prohibition is not so severe, right, as we said before. So in that case, what? The Lomahim, according to the Rabbanan, you can't trust the guy.
Yeah.
Okay? All right? Baita. The Rabbi Yehuda, the Kadochem, am I so long? So now the Gemara asks the following question. Look, was Rabbi Yehuda's statement that, the husband alone is trusted, you know, is trustworthy to escort it to Yerushalayim, and you don't need the Talmid Chachamim. So did he derive that through a Kal V'Chaimer? Behold, Rabbi Yehuda mikraim ha'isaloh. No, on the contrary, he actually derives it by his interpretation of Psukim in the Torah. What is the Pasuk? The Tanya. We have learned. There's a pasuk that says, "Vehevi ha'ish es ishtei el hakohen," right? Namely, the man is to bring his wife to the kohen. That's what we're talking about, the sota. Okay. So min haTorah, according to Rabbi Yehuda, right? Because we're talking about the Mishnah. Sometimes it gets a little confusing between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yehuda. Okay. Mm-hmm. There are several Rabbi Yehudas, by the way, too, you know. Yeah. So, then our Torah, the Torah itself then commands what? That ho'ish meve yisishta, right? That the man has to bring his wife. In other words, according to Rabbi Yehuda, this pasuk proves my point, namely, that the husband is trustworthy by himself to bring the wife to Yerushalayim, because the Torah says that the man is to bring his wife. It doesn't say the man plus two others is to bring him. Okay? Avol omru chachomim, but the chachomim said, no sir, Rabbi Yehuda. They say, most we know shnei talmidei chachomim. You have to bring, you know, you have to give him two talmidei chachomim, shema yovei olecha baderech, lest, you know, he has relations with her on the way. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Rabbi Yossi comes along and he says, what? He says, he says that her husband can be considered trustworthy concerning her simply by Kal V'Chomer. As we said before in the case of Rabbi Yehuda. So here comes Rabbi Yossi, who, they quote another tradition, but, you know, similar to what Rabbi Yehuda had to say, right? Namely, right? That is, just as in the case of the Nida, where the punishment would be Koris for violation, and the husband nevertheless is considered trustworthy, you know, to stay with her. So, Saita Shehiba Lav, they call Shekin, right? Exactly the same as what Rabbi Huda had to say a few lines above. So, Amulo, so they said to him, hey, wait a minute. Im Amrit Benida, if you're talking about Nida, they said, why? Shekin Yishlaheta, here's where the difference comes in. That they argue with Rabbi Yossi on a different basis. They say to him, look, in the case of a Nida, there is a time when she is permitted to her husband. Not obviously when she's a Nida, but when she's not a Nida. You know, when she's clean, she's gone to the mikveh and everything else, and of course, you know, she can have relations with her husband. And of course, what would the result be? So as Rashi points out, we'll come back to the Rashi in a minute, you know, in other words, the husband can afford to be patient because he knows that his patience will eventually be rewarded. Okay? In other words, after she's gone to the mikveh, then he could again resume family relations with her. Okay? So in other words, we can trust him not to have relations with her during the time that she's in Nida, because he knows that there's a time when she will be committed to him again. Okay. So, Toma Bisoto She'ena Heter, will you say then that this is true also in the case of Sota? With Sota, if she is unfaithful to her husband, and it can be proven, you know, that she is unfaithful to her husband, then as we've already had said on several other occasions, what is the din over there? First of all, it's Ne'aseres Alav, right? She is prohibited to the husband. And that means he has to give her a get.
Right.
Has to give her a get, okay? Because she can no longer live with him as husband and wife. But not only that, it's also Ne'aseres Levo'ala. She's also prohibited from marrying the person with whom she had relations. She can't have any relations with him either, you see. She would only be permitted to marry somebody who is not either the Baal or the Boyim. Okay? So, in that particular case, he'll never be able, according to the law, if she is guilty, to do what? To have any relations with her again. So, what would that influence in him? So, but Omer, besides, says the Gemara, say the Rabbanan to Rabbi Yossi, right? They say, you know, we have a pasuk in Mishlei, very famous pasuk in Mishlei. What does the pasuk say? It says, Mayim Ginuvim Yim Taku, which means literally, stolen water is sweet. In other words, that which is prohibited to you makes it all the more enticing to you. Okay? Mayim Ginuvim Yim Taku. This is what it means, okay? So, Rabbi Yehuda, yeah, okay. So, in other words, how are they answering him? First of all, they say, you know, that there is no heter if it's really true that she has committed adultery. So he can. But in addition, he will be tempted all the more because people, if they're challenged with a prohibition, so you know they look for a way, right? The human weakness, you know, is my human toggle.
You know, that reminds me, I'm just going to waste time. Many, many years ago, when I was, I took a course of criminal law at law school. This is like 1969. We had an examination, and our law professor asked a question with these hypothetical fact situations about statutory rape, but he had a sense of humor, so he described a situation where a man made the acquaintance of a young girl who was in actuality 15, but and there were different variations. One of the variations where he knew that she was 15, and he phrased it, he said, you know, the lure, the tang of forbidden fruit. Just thinking that this is really the origin of that.
This is the origin of the idea, right?
The origin of that
exactly
phrase.
Mayim
Ginuvim Yim Taku.
Of course, the idea, you know, of the forbidden
years.
Fruit, you know, we know this has been a terror, you know.
Yeah.
What was, what did the banish them tell Adam and Chava? All right? Yeah. The pre-Hoates, right?
Right.
Okay. Now, Rabbi Yehuda Eimer, right? Rabbi Yehuda says, Min Atayra, look, the Torah says, What Ho'ish Bebi Es Ishtay La Kohen? Shenema Behebi Ho'ish Es Ishtay, right? He insists, I have a pasuk, never mind my Kal V'Chomer. I have a pasuk, and my pasuk tells me that the Behebi Ho'ish Es Ishtay means that the man brings his wife. And it means not only that, but I insist that the man can be trusted to follow the teaching of the Torah and to do it, you know, without going into monkey business. Okay? Yeah. Right. Okay. Omalahu, so he said to them, Kal b'chema b'reisha b'rachuha. Right? So he says, look, at the beginning, along comes Rabbi Yossi and says, I can prove it by Kal b'chema. Right? And then what happened? B'rachuha. They broke down the argument. Okay? So v'hodor, and again, Omalahu, along comes Rabbi Yehuda and he says, Kra, I got a pasuk for you. Right? So they say, Rabbi Yehuda, I knew Tanakama. That's the case. What's the difference between Rabbi Yehuda and the Tanakama, you know, who also said, you know, that after all, we have a pasuk that says, Vehebi Yehush is Ishtoi, right? So why do we have to have Talmidei Chachamim? So they say, Yikob Benayu. This is a point of dissension between them. Namely, Abol Omru. But they said, in other words, according to the Chachamim, they too would be in agreement that there is a pasuk, and it says what? The heavy ishta. In other words, it should be enough that the man should be trustworthy. But we don't trust the man because of the fact of everything else, you know, that's being said. And not only that, but we insist that we have to have Tabidi Chachamim to warn him to make sure, or if he violates it, then they should be the Edom when they get to Yerushalayim. That he violated it, and then she would not drink the Maimon Morim. Okay. Alright, let's finish the Rashi up to this point. It says, Soto Shehi Balav, right? You see where it is? Yeah. Over here in the big print, it's easy to spot the. if you have the regular edition, you know, when it's all printed exactly in the same type, it's a little bit harder to spot. Okay. Alright, so it says, the lo yuchal balo harishon, as we said before, the first husband is not permitted what to live with her, you know, when she has been guilty of what? Of adultery, right? As we say in the Gemara Yavomis, Perakama, it says, Mani Mikayim, Acharei Shehut Hamoa, after she has been defiled. There, of course, really, originally in the Torah, they're talking about the fact that she's been divorced, and then she marries somebody else, and again, either the second husband dies or is divorced, and it says that the first husband is not allowed to remarry her. Okay? Acharei Shehut Hamoa is the language over there. But they take it over here, they say Acharei Shehut Hamoa, it says the rabbi Saita Shadistar. This also includes the Saita who has gone into seclusion, and actually, you know, that he cannot live with her anymore, not until she has been proven with the Mayan Hamor. Okay. The He Hanoiselitz, in other words, and this is what they're arguing about. Hamida Hazos, this, literally this quality, but in this case, this particular case they're arguing, Shehevesa Raili Varecho, you brought a proof for your words, He Hanoiselitz is Hadin. On the contrary, this proves our point. Sheonu Omrim, we say, Zorichedim. She has to. He has to bring witnesses with him. Okay. Nido shehi bekoreis chamura ola. Right. This, of course, you know, he knows he will observe strictly the yeni bo aleha, and he will not have relations with her during the time that she's in nido. But what should we say in the case? But why? So one of the reasons that we say is shekein yesh lo heter, as we said. In other words, there is a time when the woman is permitted to her husband, right? Shetit har. In other words, after she's gone to the mikvah, then in that case, l'fichach, so for that reason, ein yitzro togfo, is not, in other words, his yitzer, his, you know, the evil desire within him, will not, you know, force itself upon him. In other words, he can live with the fact because he knows shemuftachu le'achazman, that after time has passed, you know, he'll be able to live normally again with her, have relations with her. But in the case of the sota, where we said that the shetisteres she'ein lo heter im timotzei temeyo, what happens if we discover that shitake is guilty? Well, l'fichach. And for that reason, Liba Rudeh Pachareha. On the contrary, he wants all the more right now, you know, to because he knows that in the future, if Shitaka was guilty, he wouldn't be able to have any more relations with her. He'd have to put him aside. And besides, we have this pasuk by Genudim Kolomer. In other words, Dobe Osir Lo, something which is prohibited to him. Yitzra Rode Pacharov, temptation pursues him continually. He's continually tempted with that. Ufrachuha, now before you talk to Kal v'Chomer, right? And we knocked it down by saying Shekein Kedoma Shekein Yeshlo Heter, that all right, the Kal v'Chomer doesn't work because of the fact that they cannot compare the man, you know, who refrains from relations with his wife while she's in Nida with the fact, you know, with the Sota, okay? Because as we know, Shekein Yeshlo Heter. But so what's the difference between them? So they say, Avol Omru, Rabbi Yehuda, Leslai. As I said before, Rabbi Yehuda does not accept what the Chachamim said, namely, that true, we got a pasuk that says, V'hevi Yushas Ishto, and would not be denying that, the man definitely has to go along to Yerushalayim with his wife, right? But, I don't accept, says Rabbi Yehuda, what you say, that you also have to have the two Tavir Chachamim to escort as witnesses. He doesn't accept it. Gay two of us. Okay.
Yeah. Well, he has an argument.
Yeah, yes.
I still have a problem.
Okay then, let's hear it.
Yeah. Right, I have two problems. Right. The first is...
You don't tell me now there are four problems.
Well, the first, I think there's a little logic bears on this.
Okay.
This argument is phrased as if the husband is finds himself suddenly in a state or condition that has been forced upon him, that is a result of compulsion, i.e., he's on a road.
He initiated it, you know.
Well, that's my all right. Well, thank you. That's my point. Let's
right.
Let's jump to the point. So,
yeah.
Therefore, if he was so upset or unhappy about the idea that he would never have relations with his wife again, then he didn't have to bring this accusation in the first place.
Right.
He just could have ignored the situation
and
gone along.
Right. But unfortunately, he started the process. So once he's caught up in the process, then he has a real problem on his hands.
All right. It's not convincing me. Now, the second one has to do with human nature, which I'm not all that good at, but explain this to me. He uses a husband who's very unhappy, to say the least, about what he suspects is adulterous behavior on the part of his wife.
Right.
And yet, to the point where he's going to bring her to the baking kettle. And yet, there's a supposition that despite all this anger and hurt feeling, whatever, they will all of a sudden be enticed by what my professor used
to
say, the tang of forbidden fruit.
Yeah.
That,
he still wants to go to bed with her.
You see this.
But, you know, their feeling is, look, you started it, you made your accusations and everything else, and the woman wants to be proved innocent. Right?
Right.
So in that case, you have to follow through, and you have to do it according to our rules. That's all.
This is what I see. Oh, I see this as part of a legal process.
Right.
I see the Shnei Tamini Chachamim, that they're important because they'll be a deem if something goes wrong. Otherwise,
first of all,
no
the Yisru.
Right.
Right, they have to give him the warning, you know, that he shouldn't do it. And secondly, if he goes ahead and he still goes to bed with her on the way, then in that particular case, they'll come to the best in the Yerushalayim.
Yeah,
they say, look, this is what they did.
And you say that if he didn't have the edus, if he didn't have the two chaperones, so to speak, and he had relations with her on the way, and he comes to the base in, he'd have to lie to them that he did
according to Rabbi Yehuda's opinion,
right.
He says that he's trustworthy.
Of course.
Okay. But why is he trustworthy? Rabbi Yehuda first tried it on the basis of logic, right? That if he can refrain during neither, so he certainly should be able to refrain now. But we knocked down that argument, okay? Because we said, on the contrary, he may decide he wants to have a last fling with her. Okay? You understand?
What if they live in Yerushalayim?
if they live in Yerushalayim, they still have to go from one place to the other.
But what if they live 10 minutes away from
the base? Yeah, that wouldn't make any difference.
Then they certainly wouldn't... They
look,
wouldn't
even in Yerushalayim...
Would they send the Talmid HaChacham in that situation?
Yes. Yes, I'm sure that they would.
Well,
because even in Yerushalayim, obviously,
they were afraid that even the Kohanim would have to.
Yeah,
you understand?
Had something to do with it.
So he brings it to one of the lower courts in Yerushalayim, to a Beis Din over there. Okay. So what happens?
Machozi.
Right. Yeah. So in that case, they say, okay, you have to go up to the Beis Hamikdash before the Beis Din Agodol over there, and so on and so forth, and we give you these two guys to go on the way, because if this is the procedure, this is a procedure, and according to the Rabbanim, this is the correct procedure. In other words, they disregard the ruling of Rabbi Yehuda over here. The law would follow the Rabbanim. Okay,
well, that's the safe way, I suppose.
I know if you remember when we had
the on a long trip, you
right,
want to make sure
right
that nothing happens. But
yeah,
if it's only a few minutes away, you know, yeah, one would think that they wouldn't have to go through that process.
Yeah. We had a case, I don't know if you remember, that we studied the Gemara Makkos, about in the year HaMiklot. Okay. Now we know that normally, you know, if a person is guilty, you know, of manslaughter, all right, we don't know, is he innocent, is he guilty, has to be brought to a Beis Din.
Mm.
Okay, if you remember. And then the Beis Din has to determine yon, nein, and so on and so forth. And as a matter of fact, we learned that according to an opinion over there, that first of all, the first thing they do is they take him into the Yer HaMiklot, and then they take him out again in order to bring him to the Beis Din where he has to be judged. Okay?
Right, yeah,
and then either they say, okay, the man should be executed, or they say the man should go back into the Yer HaMiklot.
Right.
Or they can say that this was the kind of a thing that was absolutely unforeseeable and unavoidable, and, you know, they could free him.
Well, what was
that's
the purpose
case
of them
all right
accompanying him? All right, go ahead.
All right. But then, if you remember, and again, yeah, right, from the Beis Din, they had to accompany him to the Yer HaMiklot to
back
see that the Goyel Hadam
right
doesn't kill him on the way.
That's
okay?
Right.
Which
right
is a different
right
case.
Right. And then we had the case of what happens if it happens in the Yer HaMiklot.
If the Goel Hadam, the Goel Hadam comes
no,
after
right him. Not the, no. We learned, I mean, that he can do it in the Yer HaMiklot itself. But I'm talking about what if an accident occurred in the Yer HaMiklot itself.
Mm. Oh, I'm sorry.
Right?
No. Okay, I'm sorry. Right, right, right.
Yeah, right.
He killed a person in the
right,
right,
right, right, right,
right,
right,
right,
right.
So, even in the Yer HaMiklot, he still has to be judged in order to, you know, to determine. And they asked the question, I remember, I mean, what happens in the Midbar, you know, when the people of Israel were traveling out in the wilderness and so on, you know, what to, so they went from one machne to another machne, something like that, in order to avoid the vengeance of the Goyim. So I think that it's somewhat analogous to the case that you asked, what would happen in Yerushalayim. Namely, that they would still have to go through the procedure and take him, let's say, from Meir Shorim, they'd have to take him to the Harabayas or something like that, okay?
Okay.
All right.
Back to the mission.
Yeah. All right. So we'll start with the new Mishnah. Okay. Good. This will go down to the bottom of the page or
okay
top of the next page. All right. Some of it I mentioned last week already in connection because the problem came up, and so I pointed out what happened. All right. So the Mishnah says, "Hoyu mali noisu lebeis din agolish b'Yerushalayim." All right. In other words, after they started out from the local Beis Din, so the husband, the wife, and the two Talmidei Chachamim escorts, they bring her up to the Beis Din HaGadol in Yerushalayim, which, as I said, where do they meet? They meet in the Lishkas HaGozis, in the temple, in the Beis HaMikdash. Okay, that's their headquarters. Okay? Uma'ayin Oleha. And the judges over there, they give her, they talk strong words to her. As we said, you know, that the word la'ayim in modern Hebrew means, you know,
threaten,
to threaten. But over here, the idea is not so much threaten as it is, you know, to cause her to feel, you know, the word la'ayim comes from the word ema, which means fear, trembling, or something like that. So, you know, they speak to her in such a way, you know, that fear should overtake her. She should think, you know, what she's doing and so on. Okay. Kederach shema'ayim in aleda nifoshes. Just as we learn in the Gemara Sanhedrin, they also speak this way to witnesses who come to testify concerning a person who would be guilty of a capital offense.
Mm-hmm.
They also, you know, they tell him, look, you know, your testimony can send an innocent person to death if you're not telling the truth, or if you're not accurate, and so on and so forth. And so on. In other words, that they should feel. And as I mentioned, you know, there's the place where we have that famous quotation, you know, that in other words, if a person destroys even one soul, it's as if he had destroyed the entire
world.
Whereas on the contrary, if a person preserves one soul, it is as if he has preserved the
whole
world. So they say, in our words over here to her, in order to cause her to do what? In order to cause her to feel a sense of repentance, and if she thought it was guilty, so she should confess to the guilt. Okay. The Omerla, and this is what they say to her, Biti, daughter, Harbe Yayin Oisa, wine causes a lot of evil. In other words, maybe you were drunk at the time, didn't realize what you were doing, so maybe this is what happened, right? Or Harbe Shoikosa, you know, fooling around, having a good time, at times you lose your head, you don't know what you're doing. This also could do a lot of damage. Or Harbe Yaldusa, or maybe it's a case, you know, that you acted like a child. In other words, you didn't act like a mature. Neighbors that you have can also cause you to do a lot of damage. You know, you try to live up to the Cones and the Goldbergs or something like that, and you try to live their lifestyle instead of living a correct lifestyle, and as a result, you got instead doing what you want. At any rate, Asi Lishmo HaGodol, for the name, for the sake of his great name, in other words, Rabbeinu Shel Eilam's name, Shenichta B'Kedusha, which is written in holiness, of course, upon the scroll that the Kohen has to write, okay? Shelo Yimocha El Hamayim, so that God's holy name should not be wiped out with the water, right? So in other words, do what? Confess if you've done wrong, so that it shouldn't be necessary, you know, to go through the business of the drinking the Mayim Hamal, right? The Omer Lefanehu Devorim Sheinum Kedai L'Shomam Hi V'Chol Mishpachas Beis Aviha. And he says to her things that it's not worthy that she should hear them. In other words, he'll say certain derogatory things or something. So it would be like disgraceful things to her, and also a disgrace to her family. What they are exactly, nishkefelach, I mean, but obviously he was instructed, you know, to say something to her where she would feel ashamed. Shame for herself and a shame for that, right? Im Omra, so if after these words she says to Mea Ani,
I'm innocent.
No, on the contrary, it means I'm guilty.
Oh, guilty.
I'm clean, literally, right? But it means that I am guilty.
Clean.
No, I'm unclean.
Unclean.
Right. Then in that case, Shoveres Kesubaso Viotes. Then literally what it means is that they break her kesuba, in other words, they make null and void the kesuba in the sense that she's not going to receive any monetary compensation, right?
Yeah.
The yotzeis, and she then is divorced
right.
from him. Okay. You asked me the question, why isn't she condemned to death? But the answer is there were no witnesses to give a warning, you know, that she was committing adultery and so on and so forth. There are no witnesses. So the result is that the marriage is dissolved, right? It's a divorce. But as a penalty, because she did commit adultery, then in that case she does not receive the monetary payment that was promised to her.
Yeah.
In
the what is the phrase that self-incrimination, you cannot convict yourself?
Yeah, ein odom mesim es atzmo rosha.
Okay.
Okay?
Ein odom.
Ein odom, there is no man, mesim atzmo, who can declare himself or make himself literally into a Russia. So that means that you cannot, you know, give testimony in order to convict yourself. Yeah. Okay. So, in that case, this would be the result. However, the Imam Ra, let's say she said, Tahora Ani, I am innocent, that in that particular case, what is the next step in the procedure? Then Malin Oisel Shar Hamitzwa, Shel Pesach Shark in the Kanor, they take her through the eastern gate, which is near the gate of the Shar Nikanor, very famous gate. This Gemara that we had in Tinus, I don't know if you remember the miracle that took place, that the gates, which were a gift of Nikanor, they floated. First of all, the sea, if you remember, the ship went down in the sea, and Nikanor was saved, but he was afraid, you know, that these precious gold doors that he had commissioned for the Beis HaMikdash were lost. And then, lo and behold, the miracle occurred, and the doors floated to the shore, and they were able to bring it to Yerushalayim. So this is a very famous story that we had.
Yeah, I recall it.
Right. Yeah. So anyway, they take it to, you know, next to the opening to the Shar Nikanor, Sheshom Mashkenes Asoitais, the place where there it is that they administer the Maim HaMa'orin to the women who are suspected of adultery, to the Soitas, or Umetarmes HaYoldais. This is also a place where a woman who gives birth, in those days, you know, she had to bring kinim. In other words, she had to bring two birds, okay?
Yes, a sacrifice.
Right, it's a sacrifice, and that, you know, and of course going in the mikvah, so in counting the number of days, if you remember, 33 and 66, depending upon whether it's a male or female child, she didn't birth though, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, then she was completely tahora, okay? So she would bring her sacrifice over there. And also, this is a place where Umetarin is a Metzorayin. A Metzorah, a person who suffers from leprosy, after he has been declared clean by the Kohen, right? So, you know, he has to count days, and then also he has to bring, you know, Zos Tiyataris HaMetzorah, that's the Gemara, you know, Parsha Metzorah over there, that there's a whole procedure, you know, that he also has to bring two birds over there, and, you know, one is set free, the other one is offered us as a sacrifice, and so on and so forth. And he also has to bring an Oshom, he has to bring a lamb as a guilt offering, and so on. It's a ganza mice over there. Okay, so this is the place in the Beis HaMikdash where it was done. Okay, the Kohen oches b'godel, and a Kohen then grabs hold of her garments. It may be the same Kohen, may not be. There's a machlekes about that. Maybe it's a different Kohen who does this job. Okay.
Different,
at any rate,
different from what?
Different from the one who read, you know,
read the writer.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So in nikru, if the garment is ripped, then it's ripped. In nifrimu, and if the garment is that is the seams on the garment are torn apart, you know, not the cloth itself, but the seams are torn apart, then nifrimu. Achihu Megala is Liba, until literally he uncovers her heart, in other words, until he bears a breast. Okay? The Soiser is Sarah, and the other step is that he has to literally disarrange her hair. Now, as he do that, obviously the woman normally would go with her head covered, so he has to remove her head covering. That's the Soiser is Sarah. Okay? Rabbi Yehuda in there. Rabbi Huda says, "Im hoyo libo doe, if she had a beautiful chest, okay, then lo hoyo megaleu, then he would not bear it." Okay.
Im hoyo saru. He knows the beautiful one, and he doesn't bear it.
You know, what shall I say? Beauty is in the eye of the
beholder. Hey, he asked for a husband.
Im hoyo saru doe, and if her hair was beautiful, then then he wouldn't uncover it, you see. Okay. Now, Hoyasom is Kasa Bilbonim, let's say she was wearing white garments, then Mechasa Vishhoyim, then she has to put on black garments. Okay? Pointing to the Rambam, and the reverse is also true. If she were wearing black garments because she looked good and sexy in them, then that means she has to put on white garments. Okay? Hoya Leho. What if she had, for example, a jewel, or bracelet, or something, you know, which is made out of gold? the katheois. The Latin word capella means literally a chain myth around the neck, okay? In other words, what we're going to call a necklace, okay?
Yeah.
Let's say she had a gold necklace, right? Nizomim, nizomim would cause earrings or nose rings, okay? The tabors, or she's wearing rings, right? Then in that case, ma'avirim imena, kedei l'nafla. Then they have to remove it from her in order that she should feel disgraced, okay? And after that, maybe Hevel Mitzri, he brings literally an Egyptian cord. Rashi takes it as a little different. Rashi takes it, you take a look in the second line, where he says, Asui Chatsuri Dekel, he says it's made out of threads of the palm tree, or like branches of the palm tree that are woven together, Mitziv Hakodel, from the Siv. The Siv is the threads, you know, that go inside the leaf itself, right. So viva dekel v'chorachal, which go around. In other words, these are the thick ones. Anyway, it's a thick rope. There's no question about it. But if you take it in the sense of mitzvah, the way we normally do, you know, as Egyptians, so obviously the Egyptians were used to making ropes, also strong ropes, made out of fiber, okay? And so this is the kind of a rope that he takes. The kosher, the malam d'adeho, and he ties it above her breasts, okay? In order to, you know, again, the idea being, you know, that this is to make her feel disgraced. And it's sort of like, you know, Hester Prynne's Scarlet Letter or something like that. You understand?
Yeah, I understand.
Yeah, all right.
I keep thinking of the possibility of the woman's going through this because she believes she's innocent.
Right. So
they're doing
they're really disgracing her unnecessarily if she is innocent. Right, right. In order to prove the fact that she is not committed adultery and she's innocent. Absolutely right. And not only that, but the Gemara now says, the Chol HaRotzeh, the Rose, Bo Liros. In other words, if there are any spectators who want to come and witness what is going on, they are permitted to come and witness this. Chutz b'yavodeho, except for her servants, the shifas of her male servants or her female servants, b'nei shalim b'gaz behem. The reason being because she's familiar with them, she won't feel a sense of shame in their presence. Whereas with other spectators who are not, you know, her own servants, she'll feel ashamed in the presence of any person who comes in order to see her as she is in this moment of disgrace, okay? Shenemar, v'chol hanoshim mutoris l'reso. And any women who want to come to see her can see her in this moment of disgrace. Shenemar, as we have a posuk, v'nibosru kol hanoshim v'lo sa'zeno k'zimascheno. This is the posuk in Yecheskel which says that all the women who commit adultery will be chastised so that they will not do, in other words, that women will not do even in accordance with your own harlotry. You were a harlot, so if people see the kind of punishment meted out to a woman who is a harlot, then in that particular case they will not be guilty of doing it.
Vachasir is to remove?
Yes.
Also listor, then.
Well, listor over here is, sometimes. It means to destroy something, right? To break up something. For example, we have.
Good. Okay.
There he is.
Today is March the 5th, Gebal.
1997.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
We are now, I'm going to review first the Rashi to the new Mishnah that we had, which starts then at the bottom of Zion Omad Aleph, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll continue with the new Gemara on the top of Zion Omad Beis, okay?
Yeah.
For one thing, if we take a look at the Rashi, it serves as a review as to what we learned in the Mishnah. Mm-hmm. All right. Now, if you remember, the Mishnah started by saying that they would bring you before the Beis Din HaGadol, in other words, the great Sanhedrin in Yerushalayim, and then it says, Ma'ayim in Oleha. And in other words, you know, they would say harsh words to her, literally like threatened her and so on, but they would say harsh words to her. Why? Shetahei Moda, in order, says Rashi, so that she should confess. You know, if she's guilty, then they wanted to confess her guilt, right? And the Mishnah continues to say that, you know, they would give her these threats, Kedar Shema Ayim in Our Lady Nefoshes, even as they would, you know, say these words of warning to witnesses who had come to testify in a capital case. Kedar Minim in Sanhedrin, says Rashi, even as we say in Sanhedrin, Havu Yodin Shelo Kedinim Momonos. Actually, it should be Havu, but it's a Havu. Havu doesn't make any big difference. It means that they would say to the witnesses, "You should know, Havu Yodin, Shelo Kedinim Mamonos Din Nefoshes." That you know, capital cases are not like cases which involve, you know, money. In other words, you know, I have a taina to you that you owe me money or whatever it may be, and so on. Because in this case, Ferek Echodinim Mominos, which happens to be the fourth chapter in Sanhedrin, because they want to impress upon the fact that in a capital case, if they give testimony, it may result in the death of a person. And we try to prevent that as much as we possibly can. Okay. And then, if you remember, they began talking to her and they said such things as, right? Biti Harbi Yain Oisa, right, that wine does a lot of things to people. And among the other things it says over there, Harbi Yaldus Oisa, this is where Rashi picks it up again. In other words, immaturity also causes mistakes in conduct. The Gorim, he says, the Naro Yaldo, and they cause a young maiden, in other words, a young and experienced girl, you know, hasn't lived in Moshe Tova de Kilko, that, you know, she should do, you know, something evil, you know, commit an act that she had not, that will destroy her, literally. The Shemo Emes Hadover. So, if this is true, Al Tovi Yatzmech de Misa Minu Belesu, then don't bring upon yourself such a disgraceful death. Namely, if it is true, then confess. What will happen? She won't have to drink the Mayim Hamorim. If she doesn't have to drink the Mayim Hamorim, then it means that she'll be spared the punishment that is written in the Mayim Hamorim. What does it say over there? That, you know, her thigh would fall, right? And her belly would get swollen, and so on and so forth. So avoid that by confessing if you really made a mistake. Also, they said to her, you know, the things also that Shechenim Royim, evil neighbors, they cause you to sin. And why? Because evil neighbors, says Rashi, Yodim Lefatois, they know how to entice you to do that which is bad. Right? Umetsuin Lo Tomidin, they're always near her, they're always, you know, they're urging her to do this, or you know. In other words, why should you be, you know, backward? Get with it, you know.
The court is offering all kinds of suggestions or excuses of why she did this thing.
Yeah, but the basic reason why they're doing it, because they want her to confess if she really did wrong and spare, you know, the rest of the ordeal and everything else. And then they say to her words, She'eino kedai l'shomon, literally, that she doesn't deserve to hear, nor should her family. Now, obviously, what kind of words are these? So he says, "Eino reuyalo." It's not fitting for her even to hear such words said to her. In other words, she would feel ashamed to hear herself, you know, being addressed in this kind of a manner, right? She'omer lefoneho, and he says before her, "Divrei hadois sadikim horishonim." Then, you know, he tells her, you know, all about confessions. This is what Hoidoyas over here means, confessions made by some of our great righteous people of olden times. In other words, they weren't perfect. They made sins, right? But when they realized that they had sinned, they had confessed. Elokadesha Toidal Kilkula. The reason being because they want her to confess her, you know, her misbehavior. Kedar Minim LeKamen, as we say, and will have, you know, the confession that they say to her, Yehuda Bosh, Yehuda Hoda Velo Bosh. Yehuda confessed that he was wrong, and he wasn't ashamed to admit it. So, in other words, you shouldn't be ashamed either. If you were wrong, confess it. And then what happens if she says that, Taka, you know, I did it, then in that case, the next stop that they say is, then they say, right, the Rashi didn't comment on that because it doesn't require any great comment. Namely, do it for the sake of God's name, which is written in holiness, so it should not have to be erased by the water. And then so on and so forth. Yes, and then it says, Im Omro Tameyani, the Mishnah says, right, if she says, I am Taka, guilty, right? Then in that case, Shaveris Kesubosa. Now, literally, it means that she breaks her Kesuba, the Yod says, and she is divorced, okay? So Rashi explains, what is Shaveris Kesubosa? So he says, what it means is as follows. He says, Kosevis Shover Al Kesubosa. Now, in other words, she writes a note concerning her ksuba, right? And what is written in the note? In the note she writes, Zonisi, I have committed adultery, the Ipsadati ksubosi, and as a result, I lose my ksuba, right? And then the Nosenis Biyad Ba'alo, and she gives it into the hand of her husband. In other words, she gives him this like a receipt, right, to say that, yes, I admit that I was guilty, and therefore, right.
Well, except Zaniti, I mean, I know it doesn't really say Niyakti, I mean...
All right, but I mean, Zona also, I mean, after all, what is a Zona?
Right, I know it's...
Okay, you don't want to say, you know, I committed adultery, all right. So say, I've sinned. But we know what kind of a sin it is.
Right.
Okay, yeah. She gives it into her husband, right? Shelo tisbe'enu le'achazban, in order to prevent afterwards her coming with a claim that she has been paid her ksuba. So as a result, he naturally has now a receipt of the fact, you know, that she loses the ksuba. In other words, the 200 zuz or whatever it is, you know, that she was supposed to get in case of divorce, right? And she can't come and claim, you know, that she failed to receive the money. The Yeno Neheregas, nor is she put to death, even though she is committed, I mean, she is, you know, she confessed that she committed adultery. Why? Shelo Hisubo Eidim Mishas Masa. Because the witnesses never warned her at the time when she was engaged in, you know, committing the adultery, that, you know, she could be punished with death as a result. And if you don't have Hasra, then in that case you cannot give a death penalty, as we learned in Marcus, as we learned over here again. It's reiterated. And then what do they do after that? So then it says, you know, that Malan Isa the Shah Hamiswat, they bring her in through the eastern gate, Shal Pesach Shar the Kanar, which leads to the which is the entrance leading to the gate of the Kanar. Shesham Mashkedes HaSotos, there the Mishnah says they cause the sotos to drink. Also it's there that Betarines HaYoldos, that women who have given birth and they come with their sacrifices of thanksgiving, so they become cleansed from, you know, the what happened after childbirth, that they're, you know, until this point they are forbidden to their husband, right? But now they can resume family life again. And also, this is the same place where people who are suffering from leprosy, they come in order to be cleansed from, you know, the leprosy, so that they can begin to resume normal life again. This is the reason, incidentally, why I brought this, so that we could see. A without going into very great detail, but as you see, it's a floor plan of the Beis HaMikdash. Excuse me. Okay. All right. Now you also have to position it. Okay. This is the east, and this is the west. Naturally, what do you see facing the west? You have over here the Holy of Holies.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, here's where the Aron was, right?
The Aron could have faced west.
Right. That was in the western part, right. And over here you have, you know, just before...
Kodesh HaKodeshim faced to the west? They faced it
it's
west?
Yeah, yeah. It was the westernmost part, correct.
Faced west.
Right, right. Exactly. It's a good reason why. Okay, I'll come to that reason in a moment, okay?
Okay.
And over here, of course, you have where the Shulchan and the menorah and so on were, okay? And then, as you can see, this is all the western part. And surrounding it, of course, you have different parts of the sanctuary, including different offices where they met, one of them being the Lishkas HaGozis, the chamber of hewn stones. This is where the Sanhedrin met, and of course she had to face the Sanhedrin as part of the ritual, if you remember. Now, they came in over here through the eastern gate, which is over here. And of course, this courtyard over here, it's rather large, was called the Ezras Noshim.
Mm-hmm.
This is where the women would be permitted to stand. Then you have over here, as you can see, a series of steps. According to tradition, there were 15 steps over there. They were called the Chamesh Asrei Ma'alot.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you know, this reminds us of King David's what? Shir HaMaalos. There are 15 songs over there. And of course, in Sukkot, this played a very important part in the ritual, that, you know, they would ascend, and each one they would recite a different psalm, and so on and so forth. And then, right over here, this area over here, this is called the Ezras Yisroel, okay? In other words, men could go in over here, but not the women. They wanted to make sure that at this point there was a separation of men and women. And then once you come in over here, now you're coming in into the Ezras Kohanim. In other words, at this point, only Kohanim would be permitted to officiate. Okay?
So is that right in front of the Mizbeach?
Yes. Here's the Mizbeach, as you can see. Here they had things for to prepare the animals for the sacrifice and things like that and so on. Here was the kiyor. This was the you know, where they had to wash their hands and feet in preparation for the avodah and so on. And then, of course, as we said, you know, there were different chambers all around over here in order to. All right. So one of these chambers that was the Lishkas HaGozis. Now, some of these, as you take a look, like over here, as you can see, this chamber has an entrance over here, but also has a chamber outside, that is, has an entrance outside. Why? Because once you were in the temple proper, then in that particular case, you had to be in a state of purity. But there were areas over there where you did not have to be in 100% purity yet in order to come in into the holiest part of the sanctuary. So this is what the story is over there. Okay, getting back to the Rashi over here, Shar Mizrach. So he says, what was the Shar Mizrach, the eastern gate? He says, this is the Shar HaChitzon. This was the outer gate. In other words, this is the gate leading from the outside into the temple itself, right? In other words, through this particular gate, through the eastern gate, this is how they entered the Har HaBayis, the Temple Mount. And from there, they went to the Shar Nikanor, to the gate of Nikanor. And this was the upper gate in the wall which separated Shebein Ezras Yisrael, Ezras Doshim. As I said, the first part was the Ezras Noshim, and then after that, you had, after the wall which separated, there was the Ezras Yisrael, okay? And then in this series we said Shishon Mashkinis Hasotas. Why? If they shall unis kadesh bikdushas azora uvi chalal osa hashar. It says in that particular area the halal, in other words the blank space, in other words the space itself, let's put it this way, the space underneath the gate, you know, the gate was there, but the space before you get to the gate, this did not have the same kedusha as the regular kedusha of the temple. So it means that over there you could have these different people enumerated in the Mishnah. As Rashi explains, Yipneham and Soroyim, this was because of the people who come in suffering from that the cured of leprosy, but Shemnachdisin Yidehem of Behomos, Lifei Medama Oshem Albohin Yodo, they could stick their hands through over there in order to dip their thumb in the blood of the Ashram of the trespass offering that they are bringing as part of the ritual becoming purified. But at this moment they were still Ubechus of Kippurim, because they were still lacking in going through the entire procedure of having finally, you know, been cleansed of everything. Let me explain. This is a technicality. But if you take a look in the Torah, Parsha Metzora, which we'll be reading in a few weeks, okay? So over there it's written, you know, that they have to count a number of days, you know, after, you know, the Kohen pronounces that they are now cleaner of any leprosy. So they have to count, you know, Shivas Yomim, they have to count 7 days, right? And after these 7 days, they are still not finished yet. Why? Because of Ayom HaShmini, on the eighth day, they first have to bring Shtei Sorin, you know, they have to bring two turtle doves, and they have to bring also a lamb, which would be as an Oshom, and things like that, and so on. So they are still Mechusa Kippurim. In other words, they are in a stage where they still cannot enter completely into the Azora, because they have not yet been cleansed. They're still waiting, you see. There's still a step that's missing, you say. We likewise say too that, for example, yes. Correct. I didn't go through the entire ritual, but I'm stressing only the idea of that Mechusa Kippurim. Mechusa Kippurim could also apply, for example, to a Kohen eating truma. There, what does the Torah say? It says that Uvah HaShemesh V'Toher, when the sun sets, that's when he becomes clean. But actually, what has he been doing before that? Before that, in the afternoon, what did he do? He went into the mikveh in order to cleanse himself. But even though he has now gone through the mikveh, and we would think that he should now be able to eat, but it's not so. He still has to wait for one other thing. He has to wait for the sun to set, and then, you know, he becomes fully. So he's a Mechusa Kippurim until that point. Okay, so this is the general term that we would use when there are still certain technicalities that have not yet been fulfilled. Okay, and he says Mechusa Kippurim, if a person, you know, still has not fulfilled all the requirements that the Torah has put down for cleanliness, and he's shenichtas la zora, and he comes into the zora, then what is his punishment? Bekores. He is guilty, and he's liable to the punishment of Koresh. So the ticha, for this reason, lo kitshum, in other words, they did not make them yet 100%. Sanctified. She yuchal la'amod b'chalal hashar. No. You have to understand Rashi. What Rashi is saying over here is this: the v'chalal kitshum or lo kitshua. For this reason, they declared that the halal, in other words, the open space in front of the gate, as I said, this is not yet holy enough. Why? In order to enable him, sheyuchal amod b'chalal hashar, in order to enable him to stand in this, you know, the space in front of the gate, sheim hoya kohen, motzi es dama osha b'chutz la'azora, areyu nifsal, b'yotze. Because if the kohen would stand, if the kohen would take out the blood of this sacrifice, and he would take it out of the courtyard, out of the azora, then this blood would then become invalid. That's what it means. So hariu nifsal, right, becomes invalid b'yotze, by virtue of the fact that it has left the temple precincts. In other words, let's picture it this way. We know that when it comes to sacrifices, right, like the oshem or the chatos, which the kohanim eat, okay, These sacrifices are called, you know, kodshei kodoshim, they are holy of holies, okay? So, or kodoshim, like Kodoshim Chamurim or something like that. In other words, they are, the higher order of sacrifices, and they can only be eaten by male Kohanim within the precincts of the Beis HaMikdash. And that's it. So, here the Kohen wants to anoint the Metzora, the leper, with the blood of the sacrifice. Because he has the spirit, you know, on the ear and so on, right? That's put. So, how can the Kohen do it in such a way that he's still within the Azorah and he's not taking out from the Azorah, and at the same time the other guy can receive the blood even though he's not 100%? So the answer is the halal. This is like a neutral area where it can be done so that the Kohen is not making the sacrifice in vain by sticking his hand out, and at the same time, so this is like a neutral area over here.
But where is this halal?
The halal is the area. See, the gate was there, okay? Now there's a space just prior to the gate. Whether it was vaulted over or something, I'm not 100% sure, okay? But before you come actually through the gate of Nicanor, which leads into the Ezras Yisrael, which is much holier than the Ezras Noshim, as we said. Then in that particular case, the Kohen can stick his finger out, the guy can put his finger, and neither one is guilty of a violation. The Metzora has not yet entered the Ezras Yisrael because he's not ready, and the Kohen, on the other hand, is not putting his hand outside of a sanctified area. Okay? A lot of technicalities, believe me.
Can I ask you, who is
Nicanor? Gemara Tainus, I don't know if you remember, there's a very famous story told about how Nicanor gave tremendous amount of charity to poor people, and he also wanted to donate golden gates to the Beis HaMikdash. So he had them made in Egypt, and they were put on a ship, and then the ship sank as it approached Eretz Yisrael. And of course the Kana was heartbroken because his beautiful donation, he did soak all his guilt into it, whatever he had left after giving charity, he thought it was irretrievably lost. So the Rebbeinu Shleilim made a nes, and the doors floated on the sea, and eventually, they reached land and they were able to bring it to Yerushalayim and so on. So, because this was his donation, because of the great nest that took place, so this was called the Gate of Nicanor. The last couple of words of the Rashi over there that we had, right? That, which means that just a tiny bit to put in, you know, in other words, for the Metzorah to come in just a little bit by coming into the Chalal, into the space, you know, which is right adjacent to the, so this the Torah permitted. Okay. Nikaner, so he says, Adam Gadol Hoya, right? It's a great man. The Havid Losis, the Chodalsis, the Chershul, the Alexander Yosho Mitzrayim, the Yosushar. And he brought the bronze doors from Alexandria to that gate. The Nasubul Nisim, and all kinds of, you know, the miracles happened, Kiditnan, as we learn, Beseda Yoma. In other words, they have reference to it also in the Gemara Yoma, which deals with the service of Yom Kippur and the temple service there. Okay? The Nikra al Shmo, and therefore these gates were called by his name. She says, then he says, over there, Shesha Mashkin and Sotos, the Be'inon, because we require, as the Gemara is going to say, Lifnei Hashem, it has to be in the presence of God. So presence of God means it has to be in the Beis HaMikdash. Okay? To the Yalaf Lakamah. Metarin is Hayolos become a Forishmai. Afterwards, I'll explain what that is. Okay, then, of course, we learned that what happens, a Kohen grabs hold of her garment, right? Okay, Bivkotdeho, where? Beveh Satsava Shalom. In other words, the neckline. Okay? This is where he grabs hold of. And then it says, Im Nikra'u, if the garment is torn, so Eino Choshes, he's not worried about that fact. In other words, he should tear. The Im Nifremu, and if, as I told you, the seams come apart, this is what we learned, it says, Primo Gidola Mikriya. It says that this is a greater tear or disgrace or something like that than just tearing the garment. Because Shenikra Lekroim Harbe, it will be torn into many, many pieces, you know, if you just rip the seams apart, okay? And he gives an old French word, de mancier, I guess, which means, you know, to make it thin or to make it into strips or something like that. Kemo hai, the poris silka. And he brings out, I guess it really should be read the porim silka. There's a Gemara in Shabbos which says, like a person who tears a beet into little pieces. You know, a burk.
A burk.
A burk, the vegetable. A beet. Silka, selek in Hebrew.
Well, silka is right.
Yeah, silka is Aramaic and selek is in Hebrew, you know, for beets. Burkus, as I said. Right.
Burk. I have to remember all these.
Burkus,
yeah.
Burkus, yeah. Achimegalis Dibo. Right, as we said, literally.
What did you teach me 5 years ago? Me, I steak.
Huh? Okay.
They're saying it looks like a monkey. You say, "Ah, it's a miskai."
All right. And then we learned, you know, that you know how far does he rip? So it's ad de megala eslibo, right? Until he uncovers literally her heart. Of course, we understand it means until he uncovers her breast, yeah. Right? And what else does he have to do? Vaseser esara, right? And he also has to literally destroy. I don't mean destroy, but it means he has to upset her hair. Bikliyoso. In other words, he takes it out of, you know, what she has bound around her head. And then it also says in the Mishnah, the next page over there, that, you know, that if she has all kinds of jewelry, right, including katlios. Katlios, as I told you, is really from a Latin word, katella, which means tachshit, who explains that this is a tachshit, kimin chatzi ugo pasuach, like sort of a half open semicircle. So Geras was Chaluka, and she can close her cloak with it. In other words, it's really it's a necklace, okay? Well, Makif is Groinum in Astodin, and it surrounds her throat from either side. And then after that, what do we learn? We learn that after that, he ties a Hevel Mitzri. Literally, it sounds like an Egyptian rope, right? And he ties it above her breast, of course, the basic reason, so that, well, we'll see, Rashi explains why. All right, anyway, but what is this Hevel HaMitzri? So he doesn't take it in the sense of Egyptian, although there are those who understand it that way. He takes it instead as a different way. He says, Osui Mitzuri Dekel. Says it comes from like either the bark of the tree or you know, some of the, like the fibers of the tree, right, of the date palm, okay, of the palm tree. He says, Mitziv, coming from threads, Hagodel Soviv Hadekel, that grows around the, that's why, you know, maybe it's like bark, okay? If you would take the bark and you take, you know, right inside the bark over there, so you see it's like threads over there. Yeah, fibers, okay? So this is what this rope is made of. And obviously, you know, the Korokalov at Samaran, this is not considered a very nice rope. In other words, it's not a decorative string, but instead it's a rough piece of rope, okay? The kosher lemalad b'techo, why does he bind it above her breast? It's kadesh lo yishbetu b'godecha l'oritz. It's in order to keep her garments off so that they should not fall to the ground, okay? Hello, hello, hi. Yes. Yes. And then we learned, you know, that you know, people are encouraged to come and to take a look and see her, particularly the women, so that, you know, they'll learn that this is, you know, a horrible fate for a woman who would commit adultery. But who should not be there, we said? So the Mishnah says, chutz b'yavodeh v'shifoseha, right? Except for her manservants and her maidservants. They are not to be over there. Why? Shaliba gaspa, because with them she doesn't have any sense of shame. As Rashi says, Kisha Odom Roa Bene Veso, right? When a person sees his own immediate family or his own immediate servants, and he says, Dato Miskaberus Olov, right? Then in that case, he gets encouragement. The low zero, and if she is encouraged, then in that case she won't be afraid of what's going to happen, right? The low soda, and she will not confess what she's doing. The yonim mevakshim, but we want shetoda, right? That she should confess the lo yimoche shem hakodesh alamayim, so that the holy name would not be obliterated by the water. And then it says, "V'chol anoshim mutoros liroisa." All the women are permitted to see her. Says the Kalim Porach. Afterwards, they'll explain what this is. "V'chol tana reisha kol haroisa liroisbo roev afil anoshim." So the impression that we get from the Mishnah at this point.